It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
Hi, James. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, nice and live in the studio today, which is nice and exciting.
It is. I got my radio voice on as well.
Brilliant. So you had your AGM this weekend. How was it?
It was great. So, so we had it here in Auckland City, and we had about 250 people there. And it was a really big weekend for us because we had two major announcements that we're laying out for the election campaign. So on Saturday, I put out the announcement or the commitment that we were going to make New Zealand carbon neutral by 2050, which is actually an eye-wateringly ambitious target, right, to get to net zero greenhouse gas emissions. And then on Sunday, just while we're making ambitious announcements, Matilda Tudeh, my co-leader, announced that we are going to put in place a plan to end poverty in New Zealand. So doing our bit on climate change, ending poverty, it's been a big weekend.
Yeah, two very ambitious goals. For the first one, climate change. So how do you plan to go about that?
Well, we've got a whole series of different announcements, some of which we've already made. So for example, Gareth Hughes earlier this year announced a plan to move to 100% renewable electricity generation by the year 2030. And Julianne Genta was talking about, you would have heard her thing last week saying that we were going to put in place the airport to city rail link by 2021 in time for the next America's Cup, which is also pretty eye-wateringly ambitious, but also possible. And she's previously talked about the North Shore rail link as well. And there's going to be more kind of transport stuff coming out during the course of the campaign. But on Saturday, I announced a billion-dollar fund to invest in green infrastructure. So those kind of, those things are going to underpin the green economy and to get us there. That includes renewable energy, particularly geothermal, energy-efficient building materials and building retrofits, housing retrofits, that kind of thing that helps to just, advance the economy, but also pull carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere.
Mm. That $1 billion, where do you see that coming from?
So $100 million of that will be government money. We're basically going to set up a new fund, a bit like the Kiwi Bank of the green economy. And the idea is that it costs about $10 million just in startup costs, but then we'll extend them $100 million line of credit. And then the rest of the money we're anticipating coming from the private sector. And that is, we know that there are banks in, Australia and the United Kingdom and six different United States in America, places like Hawaii and Connecticut and so on, where their experience is that for every dollar the government puts in, anywhere from $3 to $10 comes in from the private sector, depending on how it's structured.
Right. All right. And then on Sunday, Matilda made her announcement, of course.
Yeah, that was a biggie.
Yeah. So one of the big things from that is the families package. So do you want to talk a little bit about what that kind of entails?
Yeah. I mean, the basic design here is what we're saying is that if you actually want to solve poverty in New Zealand, and there's always going to be poor people, right? But if you want to lift the roughly 250,000 New Zealanders and children who are living in poverty above the poverty line, then what we're looking at is the most comprehensive reform to income support and the welfare system in 30 years, right? So it's a really massive package and involves changes to the tax system, it involves changes to working for families, to the in-work tax credit. There's a lot of different facets to it, but one of the features, for example, is that we would change the abatement rates. So at the moment what happens is you get sort of working for families support up to a certain level, and then beyond that level it drops off really quickly, and so you actually are paying a effective marginal tax rate of about 85%, which is a massive disincentive for people to work. And so what we're saying is actually you should remove that disincentive and say, look, it's actually good for people to be in work. You want to encourage that. And so we're basically dramatically simplifying the welfare system, which should also strip more cost out of it, which means that you can return more of that to the people who need the support.
Right. So it takes away those kind of sanctions, financial penalties there. But New Zealand does currently have the second highest employment rate in economically developed countries, and the lowest level of adult New Zealanders dependent on a benefit and not in work since 1997. Will this not kind of take away the incentive to work?
No, it won't. Yes, we've got a lot of people who are in work, mm-hmm. But we also have a lot of people who are in poverty, many of whom are working. So, you know, you remember all those headlines about a year ago when, you know, we basically apparently discovered all these people living in cars and garages. A lot of those people had jobs. Mm. Some of them had two jobs. So you've got a function here in New Zealand, a feature of our modern economy that's been allowed to build up, which is that is the working poor, right? So people who, even though they're working, you know, 60 to 80 hours a week, they still don't have enough to make ends meet, including cover their own accommodation costs. So, you know, while generally speaking in New Zealand, you know, the economy is growing, about 2/3 of people are seeing their real incomes rising after inflation, you know, 2/3 of the country sort of goes, yep, sort of heading in the right direction, all that kind of stuff. At the same time, we've had this real endemic poverty. We've had about 20% of people whose incomes, actually it's closer to 30% of people whose incomes have actually gone backwards relative to living costs, especially accommodation and housing. And for a lot of those people, they are absolutely desperate, totally stuck. And our welfare system actually traps people in poverty. It doesn't actually support them and help them get out of it.
And so the costs that are going to be met from that, is that through the tax changes that you've put forward?
A little bit.
Right.
So the tax changes, so under our, what we're proposing is a new top tax rate. So for every dollar that you earn above $150,000, you'll pay 40 cents. Below that, actually, everyone gets a tax cut. So what we've done is we've said the bottom tax rate, which is currently 10.5%, we're actually going to lower that. So if you know, basically anybody out there who has got a job, who is receiving no support from the state of any form, actually they'll get $209 a year, back. That they currently don't get. So they'll be $209 a year better off. For people earning $150,000 a year or more, obviously depending on how much you're earning, you'll pay that top tax rate. Now, those two things, they don't quite cancel each other out, so there is some additional revenue as a result of that, but it doesn't cover the cost of this package. This package comes out at just under $2 billion, and most of that is actually going to be paid for out of surpluses.
Right.
So the amazing thing at the moment is that the government's looking at running a $1.8 billion surplus, and that more than covers the cost of this package plus the tax changes. Yeah.
And so in her speech announcing this, Kōrero Matiria today admitted that she didn't tell welfare officials she'd had income from flatmates while she was studying in the 90s so that her benefit wasn't cut. That's been kind of the big headline story of today.
Mm.
Why do you think that she chose to admit that now?
Because, well, first of all, Matiria is now one of the only people in the country who has been in that situation, who has the mana and the status to be able to come forward with that kind of story, right? Anybody else is in a way more vulnerable situation than she is in. And what she wanted to do was to illustrate just how punitive and just how broken our income support system is. Because what she's saying here is that you've got good people, single mothers, honest people who are trying to lift themselves out of poverty into greater opportunity. And you've got to remember, so she was a single mum on income support, but also she was studying for a law degree. Right, she was working her butt off to get herself out of the circumstances that she was in, and ultimately she succeeded, but she just could not make ends meet. And so, you know, what she's saying is that the system that we've got is so punitive, it turns good people into liars, and that is what is broken about the system. And so telling that story, I think, was incredibly brave, and I'm frankly very, very proud of her for doing that, because we know that there are so many people who are in absolutely desperate straits, and they are being kept in those situations by the welfare system, by the system that is there to, you know, theoretically support them out of poverty. It actually traps them in it and turns them into liars and criminals.
And is that not unfair to the beneficiaries who are honest and only get the amount they should be allocated?
No, look, everybody, you know, one thing that kind of enrages me about some of the people who are going, oh, you know, dole blood, blah, 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 blah. you got to understand just how tough it is for people, right? We're talking about the working poor before, people who are working, you know, up to two jobs, people who can't get work. The income support system that we have got does not cover your basic needs. It doesn't, right? I mean, you literally, for some people, it's quite normal to have literally $20 left after you've paid for your accommodation. Well, you can't live on $20 a week. You certainly can't support a child or a family on $20 a week. I mean, it's just absurd.
Mm. A lot of groups are calling for her now that she is assumedly earning a lot more than that to pay the money back. What's your stance on that?
She said that she will. Right. If WINS investigates, if they do an investigation and say, hey, you owe us X, she said that she'll pay that back.
All right.
Yeah.
And just lastly, in his election convention speech yesterday, New Zealand First Leader Winston Peters said...
I'm sorry, who?
The New Zealand First Leader Winston Peters said that if he gets into government, he'd let the public decide whether to abolish Māori seats and cut the number of MPs in Parliament to 100. What's your response to that?
Look, I mean, he's been banging that drum since I was in high school, which... for listeners is a reasonably long time ago. That's nothing new. I mean, he's been saying that since at least the 1990s, right? I mean, it's just what he does to try and appeal to his people. It's not new. It's just Winston doing his thing. I'm not fussed about it. I don't think there's a single other party in Parliament who was up for that. He's not going to be able to get it through.
All right, James, thank you so much. It's been great having you in the studio today.
Thank you for having me.
That was James Shaw for The Green Party. The Wire.